our roundtable discussion this morning on Media at SAFM as we look at religion and the media. Back to Peter James Smith, who is the organizer of religious programming here on SAFM. The issue of accuracy, that's an interesting one. Do we always get that right?
Well, I mean, does the media get anything right, some people would say?
We try as hard as
yes,
we can, don't we?
But it's not peculiar to religion that things go wrong, is it? And I think this may be in a religious forum like this. One would assume that they always get the religious nomenclature wrong. And there is a strong tendency for that to happen. Priests and ministers, there's never any differentiation. So they don't actually know who does what to whom within the religious perspective.
How does that impact on the wider debate?
I don't know that it does, quite honestly. But I think the point is that the accuracy issue is a problem that the media has in all sorts of fields, not just religion. I'm not sure that it's any better or worse where religion is concerned.
But perhaps reporting religious issues, Peter, is open to a little more interpretation than other issues sometimes.
It could be, and it could also, there is also an emotional element very often when it comes to religious issues, because people react emotionally rather than pragmatically. And that could be the problem, and that I think is why it's so important that there should be religious specialists when it comes to media publications, whatever it might be, because they at least know where things fit into the grand design.
Shora Rouhani, Peter James Smith makes a very important point about this entire debate being driven by emotion, that any type of religious issue is immediately a reactive one. Is that your experience, and how do religious broadcasters deal with that issue?
I think in some ways Peter is right, because religion, it's a love affair of between an individual and his creator, so it would be an emotional thing. But I think that, just going back to some of the things that Professor Tiffin was saying, I think one of the problems in our experience is that often when religious communities try and get things into the media that are positive and are good, actually the interest isn't there. It is always, there is fantastic interest if it's something derogatory or if it's something contentious, but when there are good things happening, there isn't media interest in religion.
But that William Byrd, is just the broad nature of news, isn't it?
Well, generally, yes, and it's also something I guess in some instances we can dispute, because it's often about how they choose to place those messages. So I think if you look at someone like Desmond Tutu, for example, we've seen him taking a lead on several issues coming from a particular moral perspective, where there will be an absence almost of religious voices, and he will come out and say, this is what I think we should do about this particular issue. So I think it's very often a case of a lack of understanding maybe of how the media works, so that if they are doing something that is just positive, then the media might very well be skeptical of it. But we can see that if you look at Burma, I mean, we're talking about current events here. We've seen monks take quite a clear lead in protest. You know, you've got peaceful people taking a lead in a protest against a vicious and oppressive regime. Now, that to me is quite a positive action by any particular religion, in terms of wanting to go for something that is a more open and more democratic and human rights respecting opportunity. And I think there's a missed opportunity for religions all over to be saying, look here, here's a very positive role that religion is playing in our society. So let's not only focus on the extreme conservative or the extreme fundamentalist, but let's look at this. Here you've got a group of people that are quite willing to give up their lives. And again, you've seen lots of examples of this in South Africa. I mean, I guess you've got Gandhi as one of the other clear examples in history who played certainly a very particular role in bringing about social change. So even though they were in a very clear political sphere, they were certainly doing something about bringing a very positive representation, I guess, of religion and its power and its abilities to media.
And I need to get to the role of the public broadcaster and also the role of new technology, because obviously all of this has a direct bearing on young people as well. But Peter James Smith, very quickly, I was hoping I wouldn't have to bring this phrase up, but you've both forced me to do so. What in effect you're both saying as well is that religion these days is also a brand, and you've got to market your brand properly.
Of course it's a brand. I mean, what else can it be? The problem is, of course, that the brand is a fluid one. It's not consistent. You know, you're not waving a Coca-Cola sign, because because every individual member of that religion will probably have a different opinion.
Mm. But in Britain, for instance, I know the Anglican Church hired an ad agency a couple of years ago.
Absolutely, yes. Mm. And the Anglicans are quite good at this. It's very interesting when you deal with the different religions like I do and the different churches, how they react to you in the media and what their attitude is. And that's very intriguing. I'm obviously not going to spill the beans on the various churches, but it is very interesting how different their cultures are when you approach them to do something specific.
I guess someone at some point is going to value the Catholic brand, but that's a different discussion entirely. Into the home stretch of our radio conference this morning, let me introduce a fifth guest to the discussion now. The Reverend Gerda Kutzinger is the Chief Executive Officer of the Bible Society of South Africa. Reverend Tabri, good morning to you and welcome.
Good morning.
Nice to talk to you. Now, blogs, mobile SMSs, the internet, is that where the future of religious messaging lies?
I really believe so, Jeremy. The topic today, all bad news, I don't think everything is bad news. Bible Society, from our side, we really try to be proactive and on the cutting edge when it comes to new technology. If you wish, I can give you an example.
I'd like to hear what you're doing.
Just go back for a few years, think about our three major bibliothons. We use the public television broadcast to tell the people about the work of the Bible Society. That was a first in the world. And another first in the world, last year, the Bible Society of South Africa, with a partner in Cape Town, Christian Mobile, we launched the cell phone Bible. It meant that a complete Bible, all the data of the Bible, has been compacted into 1.2 megabytes, and therefore it is possible to download the complete Bible on your cell phone by sending an SMS. And we are very excited. It's available, I think, already in English, Afrikaans, Xhosa, Tswana, Zulu. The other languages are also coming. So we really try to be on the cutting edge when it comes to new technology.
But what sort of take-up have you had to your downloadable Bible?
Very good. The reaction is very good. It is especially also aimed at the younger people, the youth, and they are also downloading Bibles on their cell phones. So the reaction is, at this stage, is very good.
Are churches broadly, Reverend Kutzinger, attuned to using this new technology, or are they a little shy?
I think they are starting to use this, because when we share it with them, they are very excited. Maybe another example I can mention is the complete Bible on microchip, and the churches are so excited. It is a listening program. It is aimed especially to the illiterate people in the third world, but you have the complete New Testament on microchip. It's an instrument called the Proclaimer, more or less like a tape player with a solar panel where there's no electricity. It can't play anything else, just the New Testament in dramatized form, so aimed at the illiterate people. So again, our target audience is very important, and this project, the churches are very excited about this project.
All right, a question to William Bird and also to Peter James Smith. And Peter, I'll start with you. All very well to be able to download a Bible. Is there any guarantee, question one, that people are actually going to engage with it? But two, access to technology, particularly on this continent, does remain a problem.
I think it does remain a problem. And, you know, even though I'm au fait with the work of the Bible Society, I personally don't feel that downloading a copy of the Bible is going to do anything for anybody.
You prefer the tactile field?
Because I think it depends on how you look at the Bible and how you see its power. If you see it as effectively a magic book, then yes, you're going to think that. But if you don't see it as having, shall we say, some form of power on its own, then you probably wouldn't see that. It's like having a Gideon's Bible in your room, you know, in your hotel. If you're that way inclined, you might read it and think, wow. On the other hand, you might have a short leg on your bed.
An initiative like this then lessens the importance of the Bible?
No, I don't think it does. It depends on how you look at the Bible. That's really what it boils down to. It's the same as anything like that. It depends on the person who's receiving it, on their reaction to it. Now, you're going to get people who would be I'm absolutely delighted to have the Bible on a microchip and would be able to use it and would want to use it. And you're going to get probably the majority who see absolutely no point in it at all. It's a personal opinion, isn't it?
William Byrd, access to technology, of course, in the African context remains the big issue, though.
Yes, certainly. I mean, and I think we know that there's a significant problem and a significant challenge around access to technology, but we also know that technology is spreading, particularly mobile technology, and we're seeing that it's growing at a huge rate. I think they said 400% in a news bulletin at the top of the hour. So I think, yes, it's certainly a significant limitation, but it doesn't mean it's something that we should ignore and not look at. I think if you look at it, some of the recent innovations, for example, there's been there's a Quran for the iPod, which isn't only actual words, it's video and images. And there's also a similar version for the Jewish faith that's called the Shashpod, I think. Which is, again, it's got programming on it. It's got all sorts of things. So mobile technology is spreading at a sufficiently fast rate that I think that it's something that certainly may well be considered useful for a lot of people of various religions as we move on. But I think the critical thing for us in Africa is to say, well, we need to look at the role of the public broadcaster, which is something you mentioned earlier, because generally what tends to happen is those religions with the most money tend to get the most airtime. If you look at our own scenario, we see, for example, on our private free air channels, and even now we've seen the latest one that's just been given a license, people are going to have to pay to get access to those, and that means you've got to have a fairly large to very substantial budget to get your programs put on air, which is why I guess it's so important for institutions like public service broadcasters throughout our continent to make sure that all religions get various amounts of airtime, precisely because we need to make sure that as a citizen in a country you get a sense of the various religions and you know what your options are, and you're also aware.
I'd like Peter James Smith to respond to that. What, Peter, then, in terms of religious programming, is the role of a public broadcaster, and how do you manage that weighting? And as William suggests, you know, if the Anglicans have got a bigger checkbook than the Catholics, are they going to get more church services on the radio?
No, it doesn't actually affect us at all, because we have one constraint, and that is that the service has to be in the main in English. So say probably 90% of the service should be in English. Or
right.
That's our only constraint. And so therefore, we look at religions purely in terms of their percentage of population, and we're nice to minorities.
What does that mean?
Well, what that means is that if somebody phones up and complains you've only given us two services this year, then you can say to them, well, in terms of the demographics, you're actually only entitled to 12 and a half minutes per annum, and we've given you 2 hours. So effectively what we're doing is, so nobody can point a finger at SAFM and say that you are not giving us enough airtime, because and that's exactly how it works out. What the Bible Society is saying is that they want their own programs on our airways, and we of course do not allow religious bodies to effectively buy time on the public broadcaster. So because we have to be fair to all, and we certainly don't allow any form of proselytization when it comes to religion.
Reverend Crutzen, what's your ideal in terms of the public broadcaster then?
I think all formats should be used, and if it is possible really to have, say, for instance, Bible readings on a national broadcaster, because one of the issues, especially in our country, the whole moral regeneration movement of our vice president, the whole issue of values, of you mentioned hope, biblical values.
Sharia, is that the role of the public broadcaster?
Well, I think the public broadcaster has been doing recently a good job in actually bringing to the attention of the public the different faith groups. It's become much wider in its vision, and it has been sharing the information with the public. But, Jeremy, one interesting thing is that the Independent Forum for Religious Broadcasting, in realizing that there are other ways of broadcasting, has actually held a workshop recently for the various religious groups. So there is a move towards making people aware of other forms of sharing information, and you know it's going beyond just the public broadcast.
And Peter James Smith, is that the future? For instance, should the Pope have a blog?
The Pope doesn't have a blog, but I know a couple of cardinals have blogs, and I mean the Coptic Orthodox Church of Egypt has an amazing website. It depends on the Jesuits have a meditation. There are various Hindu groups that have meditation programs every day. And, of course, because it's international, because the internet is international, you can access these things from the comfort of your own home, as they say. So, yes, some people have caught on to it and are switched on to it, but of course it is for this, really, either for providing information or for allowing for the needs of their own constituency. Mm. And that, I think, is the important thing. It's not a proselytizing thing, as far as I know.
William Burdart from the Media Monitoring Project, I'll give you the final word on this as we run up to our 11 o'clock news. An interesting debate, lots of different views on it, but this will always be contested space, won't it?
Yes, and I mean, I think it's good that it remains contested space. I mean, I think it's brilliant that we're able to sit and discuss and argue about some of the finer points about religion and religious broadcasting. And I guess as we continue forward, it is about saying, well, which religions, especially now with the new broadcasting era and the new technologies coming in, we need to be looking at how religions are building their brands and how we can make sure that everyone in South Africa gets a fair and spiritual understanding of them.
William Bird is the Executive Director of the Media Monitoring Project. The Reverend Gerrit Kritzinger from the Bible Society, the Chief Executive Officer, Sharer Rawani, Chairperson of the Forum for Religious Broadcasters, and also to Peter James Smith, Organizer of Religious Programming here at SAFM. To all of you, thank you very much for joining us.
To find out more about this unique radio conference series brought to you by the MMP, SAFM and OSF, visit our website on www.mediamonitoring.org.za.